This is Jim O'Neill, technical evangelist in the Boston area and host of the Practical Azure series. With this episode, we'll continue our look at data storage options in Windows Azure with Windows Azure SQL Database. So here's our familiar Windows Azure roadmap. Today, we're going to take a look at, again, Windows Azure SQL Database, which is on the far right of this diagram. Now, Windows Azure SQL Database, or as it was previously known, SQL Azure, at a high level is the same on-premises SQL server that you know and love, except it's hosted as a cloud service. And since it's hosted as a cloud service, there are some differences. One of the differences is that when you have SQL Server on-premises, you're actually installing it on a machine, all of your databases are located on that machine, and you manage that machine as a physical hardware asset. With Windows Azure SQL Database, what you're really doing is setting up essentially a TDS endpoint. It's kind of like a logical server. And each database that's associated with your Windows Azure SQL Database is actually on a different machine hosted inside of the Windows Azure Data Center. So that provides a lot of functionality and features in that we can, as part of Windows Azure, manage your database assets for you. What that typically means, though, is that as a DBA, you have less control over the physical assets of the database. You can't set up file groups. You can't set up essentially backup and restore capabilities as you're used to on-premises. If you still need that functionality, however, you can still do that and take advantage of all the cloud has to offer. You can set up SQL Server in more of the traditional way on a separate machine as a virtual machine inside of Windows Azure. That's not what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk specifically about Windows Azure SQL Database, the service oriented version of Windows of SQL Server. And without further ado, let's go ahead and get right into setting one of those up. So here I am in the Windows Azure portal. I don't have any SQL databases created yet, so let's go ahead and create one to get started here. I can set up my database name. We'll just call it Jim's Test at this point. I have an option of a web edition and a business edition. The only difference between the two editions is really the database size. A web edition can go from 1 gig to 5 gig, and a business edition can go all the way up to 150 gig. For the sample here, we'll just pick a small 1 gig database. I can set up a collation sequence on the database itself. I can't actually set it up on the server, but I can do it on a database by database scenario. I indicate what subscription that this particular database is tied to. I have an MSDN subscription that I'm using here. And since I don't actually have a SQL database server installed yet or created yet in the cloud, I'm going to create one as well as part of this step. So we'll create a new SQL database server. And I'm going to give it a login name. This is essentially an SA login. You can't actually use SA or root or any of those types of names because that's more of that kind of exposes a threat in terms of people being able to access your database by just sort of trying to figure out what those passwords are for SA and root. So you have to create something a little bit more imaginative. And let me create a password here. And I need to pick what data center this database is actually going to be housed in. So there's 8 across the world. So I'm going to pick North Central U.S., which is the closest one to me. And I'm also going to leave this checkbox that basically allows any Windows Azure services that are also hosted inside the North Central database or North Central Data Center to talk to this Windows Azure SQL database. And what that allows is my applications, which are typically ASP.NET or some kind of web applications that I've pushed into the cloud, to talk back and forth to the database kind of with free reign. So let's continue. And as you can see, it's provisioning the SQL database and the server at the same time here. It takes just a few seconds to set all this up. This is essentially tantamount to creating a whole new SQL Server installation on-premises. So installing the software, configuring it, bringing up a database, and so on. And we've done it in just a few seconds here. So if I click on the database, you can see I have a dashboard. I can check out some statistics on the database, how many deadlocks, failed connections, and so on. So I have a lot of monitoring capabilities, as you can see here. I can do some configuration. So as you know, I picked a web size database of 1 gig. I can bump that up if I need to. If I find my database is a little bit too small and I outgrow it, I can bump it up sort of live. I don't have to create a new one. I can just expand it. And on the dashboard, on the quick glance over here on the right, you can see a couple of shortcut links to help you manage assets in the database and also help you manage connections to the database. At the bottom here, you'll see that there's a manage link. So the manage link is actually going to allow me to do some SQL Server administration on this particular database. When I click the manage link, you'll notice that message popped up that basically said that my current IP address, so this is the IP address of the machine I'm using right now, is not included in the firewall rules. So what this is basically telling me is when I set up a Windows Azure SQL database, it's completely shut off to the world. No IP addresses can actually talk to that particular database. We want that because we don't want people just willy-nilly from going into the public cloud and being able to access the database. So typically what you're going to do in a application scenario is you're going to check the checkbox that we saw earlier when I set up the database, the one that says allow Windows Azure services to talk to SQL Azure, because your applications are going to be co-resident with the actual database in the data center. So there's no need for any outside IP addresses to actually talk to it. From an administrative perspective, though, you may want to be able to use SQL Server Management Studio, or the tool I'm going to use shortly, to talk to the database, set up some things, tweak around, and that sort of thing. So in order to do that, you have to open up the firewall. And what this is basically doing is helping me set up a firewall rule so that I can talk to that database from my external client. And what it's really done, I'm going to click No here right quick just to show you. What it's actually done is gone ahead and created a new firewall rule for me. So you can see that here. It knows what my IP address is, so it's gone ahead and created a firewall rule, which is essentially stored as part of the database in the master database as a list of IP addresses that it will allow. You could, if you wanted, create a range from 0 to 255 and let everybody in, but I wouldn't advise it. So let's go back to the manage. Now that the firewall is set up, it should bring us right into the console. And so the management portal is kind of like a web-based SQL Server Management Studio. So I can log into the database that I just created, provide that username and the password. And what I'll end up seeing is an interface that is built in Silverlight, so accessible essentially from any web browser, that allows me to do a lot of administration on the actual database. So if I go to the administration tab, for instance, I can see that my database properties is 100% free, as we might expect, because we just created it. I have some information on query performance, so any of the queries that went against that database, I can kind of see how long they ran for, do some tuning in that regard, and I can also do design. So I can create a new table, for instance, and if I create a new table here, it's going to provide a couple of default columns, which is fine for now. And I can also add data. So let's save this table. And let's go into data, and let's add a row. So we'll add value of 1, and we'll call it Hello World. And I can save it. And then I can actually even go over here to administration, and I can say new query, and I can say select star from table 1, and run it, and there's the data. And amazingly, you even have access to a query plan inside this web browser or inside this web interface. So it's a really, really cool way to get up and going with your database. If you happen to be on vacation and you need to check in on your Windows Azure SQL database, you can just go to an internet cafe and log right into right in via the portal. But for most of us, especially those of us who have dealt with on-premises SQL Server databases, we probably have our own set of tools. We use SQL Server Management Studio, or we use other third-party type tools. All of these tools can communicate with Windows Azure SQL Database because the underlying protocol is Tabular Data Stream, or TDS. So what I want to do next is let's make a connection from SQL Server Management Studio directly into our Windows Azure SQL Database. And to do so, I'm going to go back to the portal and go back to the dashboard here. And actually, I'm going to go back to the dashboard for the database. And one of the items on the quick glance screen here over on the right is connection strings that you can use for your applications, whether it be ADO.NET, ODBC, PHP, and so on. And in here, I can grab the connection string that I need. You'll notice that Windows Azure SQL Database has set up a database server name, sort of just a jumble of characters with a database.windows.net domain. So that's all of your Windows Azure SQL databases will look like that. So let's go into SQL Server Management Studio now that I've grabbed that connection string. Let's double check that I actually did a copy here. So we'll copy that and go into SQL Server Management Studio, and we'll create a new connection. So I'll paste in that connection string that I just grabbed. We are using SQL Server authentication. That's actually a restriction, something you have to use with Windows Azure SQL databases. And we'll talk briefly about that in a moment. So let me put my password in here and go into options, and Jim's test was the name of the database. Happens to be the name that I used on a previous test as well. So let's go ahead and connect. And shortly here, you should see the server come up, and there's my database, and there is also my table. And what I can actually do here in SQL Server Management Studio is do the same query, select star from table 1, and we can execute this query. And there's our data. So now what we've actually done is we've used on-premises tools, the same tools you might be used to using with SQL Server, and actually talking to our SQL database inside of Windows Azure, which is all pretty cool. Now, one thing that I've kind of glossed over here is we've created a database from scratch. Many of you probably have existing databases, and you might be wondering, how do I get all of that data and all of that schema up into the cloud so I can leverage my current assets that I have on premises and essentially move them up into the cloud? There's a number of different ways to do that. Because all the communication with Windows Azure SQL Database is via TDS, all the tools that you're used to using to do those types of things on premises will also work. So you can use BCP, you can use SSIS. We also have a couple of different newer tools. We have something called the SQL Azure Migration Wizard, and that's actually a community-sponsored tool that's available on CodePlex that you can use to take an on-premises SQL Server database and essentially walk through it. It walks through it for you, looking at the schema and adjusting things so that it will work inside of Windows Azure SQL Database. You can also create this thing called a backpack, and you can create a backpack in SQL Server Developer Tools in Visual Studio or SQL Server Management Studio. What a backpack is, it's a package of both the schema and the data representing either an on-premises database or a Windows Azure SQL database. And it packages it up essentially into a zip file. And you can move that file back and forth between the cloud and on-premises and essentially unpack it and run it and create the database either in the cloud or back on-premises. And if you look at the portal here, you'll notice there's an export option. And there's also an import option if you're in the right screen of the portal to push it the other way. And that's one way you can move those assets back and forth very, very easily. So with that, let's move back into the slides, and I want to talk a little bit about the differences that you need to be aware of from both a DBA perspective and a developer perspective when dealing with Windows Azure SQL Database. So now that we've seen how to create a Windows Azure SQL Database, let's take a look at some of the differences both from a DB admin perspective and from a developer's perspective. From a DB admin perspective, you notice that we can only use SQL Server authentication when talking to a Windows Azure SQL Database. We also noticed that you had to set up firewalls to manage how the outside traffic can reach or not reach the server, as well as the database itself. So you can set up independent rules for your database versus your server if you want to partition your audience. But as I mentioned before, in most cases, the traffic that's hitting your Windows Azure SQL Database is going to come from a service that's most likely hosted and co-located with the Windows Azure SQL Database inside the same data center, in which case there's that catch-all firewall rule that you can select right when you create the SQL Database. Some of the notable differences from on-premises versus Windows Azure SQL Database in the cloud, and they all have sort of this theme of dealing with the physical infrastructure of the database, because Windows Azure SQL Database is managing the database for you. It's a shared multi-tenanted service. So dealing with disk drives, file groups, and that sort of thing is not something that you're going to be able to do yourself. What that means is that some of these features are not going to be available. And one of the primary ones that is somewhat alarming at first blush is the backup and restore. You can't use a traditional backup and restore capability with Windows Azure SQL Database as you might on-premises. However, there are a number of different ways to accomplish the same goal. Windows Azure SQL Database, first of all, is managed for you, and in that management, there's actually three copies of your database that are transactionally consistent at all times. So this is very similar to our Windows Azure Storage conversation we had in previous episodes. Every time you write to the database, there's two other copies that are maintained for you. If there's a disk failure or a failover or something in the data center, you will most likely not be aware of it. Your users won't be aware of it because a clone of that database will take over, and then a new backup or a new copy will be created in its place, so we'll always have three copies. If, however, you do something bad to the database, you delete some data through a SQL statement or through your application that you didn't mean to, then you've got a different problem. And the way you can handle that is through a copy command. So you can make a copy of each database as it's running and use that as your backup strategy. And you can sort of combine that with the backpack strategy that I mentioned before. So you could save copies of your database as blob storage and be able to bring them back online as needed. A couple of other things that aren't available, encryption and compression. That's something you could do as part of your programmatic layer, if you like. And then SQL agent jobs, profilers, and these sort of things aren't available either because they, again, sort of deal more with the physical manifestation of the database. Now, if we move on to the developer story, what's different for developers? Well, for developers, it's the database that's the unit of scale. So if you're working with an on-premise SQL Server database, you know that you can do cross-database joins. If you've got four databases on the same server, you can actually join data between those. You can't do that with Windows Azure SQL Database. Each database is its own entity, potentially stored on a completely different machine. In addition, each database can only be 150 gigs. Now, that handles probably 90-95% of the cases. But for those that it doesn't, there's another technology that we're going to talk about in a future episode that can alleviate that. One of the reasons, by the way, for this maximum database size is the fact that we are keeping three transactionally consistent copies for you. It takes some time to do that, and 150 gig right now seems to be about the threshold where we can make that copy yet still provide a speedy enough performance for your traditional database semantics with one of the Windows Azure SQL databases. That number, by the way, has gone up as time has gone by. So as we get better at it, as the technology matures, that number may creep upwards. A couple of other things from the perspective of feature set. Full text search isn't supported at the moment, and CLR and extended stored procedures aren't supported. So what that means in the latter case is that you can't create a Visual Basic or a C# stored procedure and run that inside a Windows Azure SQL database. You can certainly continue to run your T-SQL stored procedures, which are the vast majority of what's out there anyway. And then lastly, and this is probably the biggest one, is that there's a difference in the way that the database is managed, well, not managed, but the difference in the way that you need to manage your connections with that database. Windows Azure SQL Database is, again, a multi-tenanted shared service. You don't have free rein over the processing resources of that particular database. You're sharing the CPU, you're sharing potentially disk, and so on with other users of Windows Azure SQL Database. As a result, any sort of resource-intensive queries you have, transactions that might last longer than, say, a day, or idle connections, all that stuff is going to get cleaned up by the Windows Azure infrastructure to ensure that there's a great experience for everyone using the shared service. As a result, you may find that some of your queries are going to fail. You may find that they time out because you're using too many resources or they're running too long. And you'll get back a SQL error. It's up to you to sort of manage that type of constraint. It's up to you to sort of provide the recovery type experience that you need as part of your application. I'm going to talk briefly, or I'll give you a resource at the end of this session about something called the Transient Fault Handling Block, sort of a mouthful. And it's essentially an enterprise library block that allows you to essentially plug into some code that manages a lot of the retry logic and so on that we suggest you use to overcome and deal with some of these connection constraints. So lastly, what I want to talk about is, again, some handy links to get on board with Windows Azure. So we can get the Azure trial if you don't have it already. As you can see, it's very, very simple to set up a Windows Azure SQL database, so I encourage you to try it out on yourself. Use the Azure Training Kit for some additional resources as well. Specific to Windows Azure SQL Database, I have a number of resources here, both getting started and how to deal with performance and elasticity. I mentioned stuff about being throttled, having some connection constraints. This will tell you how to sort of deal with those. There's the link specifically to Transient Fault Handling Block to handle those retries. And then lastly, this is probably the link that you definitely want to bookmark if you're using this feature, because the cloud is essentially evolving over time. And what's not available today in Windows Azure SQL Database may definitely be available tomorrow. So this link essentially is a constantly updated link of all the features that have been added to Windows Azure SQL Database. And in fact, there are a few things just added this month, November 2012, that you might be interested in, things that you might not have been able to do, say, 6 months ago. So keep tabs on that, and as the technology matures, you can grow into it as well. Thank you for joining me for this episode, and I invite you to check out the next installment where I'll talk about how to overcome that 150 gigabyte max database size limitation via a feature called SQL Database Federations.